289. In the writings of a hermit, we always hear something of the echo of desolation, something of the whispers and the timid gazing around of isolation. From his strongest words, even from his screaming, still resounds a new and dangerous kind of silence, of concealment. Whoever has sat down year in and year out, day and night, alone in an intimate dispute and conversation with his soul, whoever has become a cave-bear or digger for treasure or guardian of treasure and dragon in his own cavern, it can be a labyrinth but also a gold-mine, such a man's very ideas finally take on a distinct twilight colouring and smell, as much of mould as they do of profundity, something incommunicable and reluctant, which blows cold wind over everyone passing by. The hermit does not believe that a philosopher, assuming that a philosopher has always first been a hermit, has ever expressed his real and final opinion in his books. Don't people write books expressly to hide what they have stored inside them? In fact, he will have doubts whether a philosopher could generally have real and final opinions, whether in his case, behind every cave, there does not still lie, and must lie, an even deeper cavern, a more comprehensive, stranger, richer world beyond the surface, an abyss behind every reason, under every foundation. Every philosophy is a foreground philosophy. That is the judgment of a hermit. There is something arbitrary about the fact that he remained here, looked back, looked around, that at this point he set his shovel aside and did not dig more deeply. There is also something suspicious about it. Every philosophy also hides a philosophy. Every opinion is also a hiding place. Every word is also a mask. 290. Every deep thinker is more afraid of being understood than being misunderstood. In the latter case, perhaps his vanity suffers, but the former hurts his heart, his sympathy, which always says, "Alas, why do you want to have it as hard as I did?" 291. Man, a multifaceted, lying, artificial, and impenetrable animal, who spooks other animals less by his power than by his cunning and intelligence, has invented good conscience in order to enjoy his own soul, for once as something simple. And all of morality is a long, bold falsification, thanks to which it's at all possible to enjoy a glimpse at the soul. From this point of view, perhaps much more belongs to the idea of art than people commonly believe. 292. A philosopher, that is, a man who constantly experiences, sees, hears, suspects, hopes, and dreams extraordinary things, who is struck by his very own thoughts as if from outside, as if from above and below, as if they are experiences and lightning strikes tailor-made for him, who himself is perhaps a storm which moves along pregnant with new lightning flashes, a fateful man around whom things always rumble and mutter and gape and mysteriously close. A philosopher. Alas, a being which often runs away from itself, often is afraid of itself, but which is too curious not to come back to itself again and again. 293. A man who says, "That pleases me. I take that for my own, and will protect it and defend it against everyone." A man who can carry out a task, put a decision into effect, remain true to an idea, hold on to a woman, punish and cast down an insolent person. A man who has his anger and his sword, and to whom the weak, the suffering, the distressed, and even the animals are happy to go and belong to by nature, in short, a man who is by nature a master. When such a man has pity, well, this pity is worth something. But what is there in the pity of those who suffer, or of those who preach pity? Today, in almost all of Europe, there is a pathological susceptibility and sensitivity to pain, as well as a nasty lack of restraint in complaining, a mollycoddling which likes to dress itself up with religion and philosophical bits and pieces as something loftier. There is a formal culture of suffering. In my view, the unmanliness of what is christened pity in such enthusiastic circles is what always strikes the eye first. We must excommunicate this latest form of bad taste powerfully and thoroughly. And finally, I wish that people would set against their hearts and throats the good amulet Gay Saber, Gay Science, to clarify this matter for the Germans. 294. The Olympian Vice. In spite of that philosopher who, as a genuine Englishman, tried to make laughing a defamation of character among all thinking men, laughter is a serious infirmity of human nature which every thinking man will strive to overcome, Hobbes, I would really allow myself to order the ranks of philosophers according to the rank of their laughter, right up to those who are capable of golden laughter. And assuming that the gods also practice philosophy, a fact which many conclusions have already driven me to, I don't doubt that in the process they know how to laugh in a superhuman and new way, and at the expense of all serious things. Gods delight in making fun. Even where sacred actions are concerned, it seems they cannot stop laughing.